welcome to our panel discussion about the importance of diversity in our newsrooms with Tina Griego, reporter, editor, and coach at Colorado News Collaborative, or what's known as Colab, and Diamond Hardiman, manager at News Voices Colorado Free Press. My name is Rosana Longo, and I am bilingual equity reporter at KGNU Community Radio. I welcome you today to this panel discussion. Tell us about your experience and the start of your careers. What were those challenges that you had to face?
Thank you, Rosana. Really glad to be here today and to have this conversation. It's a really important conversation, a timely conversation. I have been a print journalist for most of my very, very long career. I started my career in Los Angeles in the late 80s, 1989. I'm a New Mexican, so I grew up in a place where it's one of the most diverse states in terms of Hispanic representation in the country. So I grew up around that. When I left New Mexico, even though I was in California, it was really kind of the first, I want to use the word confrontation, though that's a strong word, with my ethnic identity. And because I was just a New Mexican. When I started my career, I came in as a reporter at the Los Angeles Herald Examiner, which doesn't exist anymore. But I spent my early years at the Los Angeles Times, where I actually came in through a minority education training program, which was known as MetPro at the time. And MetPro was very huge, and it made an effort to bring in, we were called minority journalists, young journalists who were just starting out. It was a two-year program. The idea is that you would get training, you would get a salary that you could actually live on, which is key. And then you could be hired. If not hired, then you had built up a resume and you'd built up some experience. So I was actually hired a year into that program, and that's where I started my career. And I started my career, as many young journalists do, just covering cops and crime and coroners. And I ended up covering cities and around Los Angeles. So, you know, my challenges as a young reporter didn't come so much There was actually, in my newsroom, there was a very concerted effort to bring in diverse journalists. There was a recognition, again, like we're talking in 1989, 1990, that this was important. Communities were going uncovered, or they were being covered poorly, or they were being subjected to caricature and stereotype. And this was an effort to address that. I think that that was a conversation that started decades ago and that we keep returning to, because it's one in which the progress proceeds in fits and starts. So we lurch forward and then there's a lull, and then we lurch forward and then there's another lull. I feel as though much of my career is spent in that pattern of lurching and lulling and lurching and lulling, where sometimes it's really important and it's an important newsroom conversation, and other times it falls from the radar entirely.
That's interesting. This is not a new topic. And from what I investigated, it seems like there was a promise done long ago that the newsrooms will get diversified by 2000. That didn't happen. If we look at the numbers, that has not happened. What do you know about numbers, about representation here in Colorado? How many reporters of color do we have here in the state?
I wish I could answer that question. I wish I could say, like, oh, we have 540. Okay, that would be way too high. But the answer is really that we don't know. We don't know how many reporters of color there are. We don't know how many editors of color there are, though I could probably rattle the editors off. Fewer than five, probably fewer than four. There used to be a national census conducted by ASNE, and they would try to keep track of demographics within newsrooms and within online outlets, but it was voluntary. And what ended up happening over time was newsrooms just stopped participating. So if you look at ASNE and you look at the 2018 data, which is the most recently posted data, four Colorado print or online newsrooms participated. In other words, the information is basically useless. So that's part of the problem. It's part of the problem that we're engaged in at Colab, that Diamond is engaged in News Voices, is that we don't really know. We don't know what the numbers are. We don't know what retention looks like. We don't know the even deeper issue of newsroom culture and how journalists of color are being supported within a newsroom. So those are different levels of kind of a baseline that I think we're working toward now so that we can measure progress, so that we can say 2021, we had 100 journalists of color or 75 journalists of color around the state in both broadcast and print and online. And a year later, we're here. Anecdotally, I think we have much fewer than we had when I started in the business, that we've actually overall gone backward. And that's a problem.
Tina Griego with Call Lab, that's really interesting. And I think that that helps us go now to Diamond. Maybe you have some data that you can share, at least maybe not here in Colorado, but in the nation. Welcome, Diamond.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Yeah, I would definitely echo what Tina was saying about the necessity for that research so that we can use it as a mechanism for accountability. And earlier today, when we were kind of talking about data, I shared over some data from a few surveys and some national organizations that I can pull up. But like Tina said, it's kind of hard to find specifics for Colorado. And what we found is that there's also like data on what other journalists think about what the landscape looks like in terms of the need to increase diversity. And with the survey that was recently published about the top 10 takeaways from the survey with Harkin and the University of Denver, what they found is that a lot of journalists were saying that they, one of the urgent needs to be able to work towards a more equitable local news was increasing the diversity in their newsrooms. But that is like one of the most specific ones is coming from inside the industry. Folks are looking around at one another and saying that we have to do more.
Well, I can personally just tell you that the first feeling that I had when I was invited to your Latinx Voices working group is to see others like me. And that was extremely refreshing. And I had the same experience with a group that you, Tina Griego, put together. Journals of Color. And I have shared these feelings with other reporters and other journals, and they are thrilled that you established this group so that we can come together and support each other in the work that we do, and also personally, the support that we need in order to continue doing this work that is so important for our communities, to represent them and to report with them, not about them only.
That's the thing. There's a few of us and we're just scattered around. And so that feeling of isolation, especially over the last year, right? It's compounded that we're alone and we're not. And so it's the idea of how do we support one another? How do we reinforce our strengths? How do we spread the mission and the message about the value of diversity within newsrooms? What does that look like? How does it work in practice? What are the benefits? What are the consequences if we don't continue to make this an issue that belongs at the forefront? Like all of those things are really bubbling up right now.
I think it's the perfect moment to talk about that. And also because I had the opportunity to interview Lori Lizárraga. She shared the story of not only being the first one, but the third reporter in Nine News to be let go and to experience difficulties in her job. It is important for us to reflect in the importance of diversifying our newsrooms. What are your thoughts about that?
We're human beings, right? We tend to operate in our own silos, our own universes. We have blind spots. If you have a newsroom that is a largely white newsroom in which there is little experience or connection to that of the Black community or the Latino community or the American Indian community or the Asian community or the disabled community or the LGBTQ community, if those experiences are not reflected, first of all, it's a self-inflicted wound because it means that your story idea generation is very limited. It's reductive. And if you can bring in people who have experiences that are outside of what has been the kind of traditional mainstream and can inform coverage. First of all, you're doing a better job of covering the communities and your community, right? That you say you're doing, right? Your job is to educate. Your job is to inform. Your job is to illuminate. And you cannot do that if you don't have diversity of experience and diversity of thought in your newsroom. which is not to say there are not individual reporters within newsrooms who are very conscious of this. That exists, but the overall culture makes it very difficult for that to happen. And so what tends to happen, the consequences of this is, like I say, is that those communities that have been left out and left behind, they stay left out and left behind, while mainstream community grows increasingly ignorant of the experience of their neighbors, of their experiences of the residents who share their state. And we tend to see greater polarization. We tend to see greater fragmentation. I think that you can't do your job as a newsroom unless you start bringing in that diversity and supporting that diversity, and understanding too that if you're an only in a newsroom, maybe you don't want to be the only covering that the community that you represent, right? We have to give people the freedom to develop their beat in the way that they need to develop their beat. That's a different conversation, but it's one that we should be recognizing. That it's not just a numbers game, right? It's not just a numbers game. It's not just like, oh, I hired one Black reporter and one Latino reporter and one gay reporter and we're good to go, because that is only one part of who they are as reporters. And that can't be a box to be checked. That doesn't do it. It doesn't cut it.
I think that's super interesting what you are just saying. Is there something that you want to add, Diamond, around this issue? Because it's true. It's almost like silos. You are hired to report on your community, and many times you are not allowed to about other issues that are also part of your community many times, or your interest.
I think Tina definitely covered it all. Good job of covering the importance of having a diversity of opinions, because it moves the center of perception and reality. So if we only have one type of folks and we're not using diverse sources, diverse journalists, diverse reporters, that center is going to stay over here and it's going to invisibilize or marginalize everybody else that does not exist in that center. And I think that you make a good point about how it silos folks, because if we're thinking about adding more Latinx journalists or more Black journalists and reporters, there's a swath of things that intersect with Black and Latinx communities that need to exist in all different types of beats. Like Black and Latina Coloradans are interested in housing. There are Black and Latina experts on housing, on healthcare, on a variety of different things that cannot be siloed to one section. And I think another really important part of diversifying our newsrooms is that we also diversify the way that we tell stories, not just like the perspective of stories and the impetus of stories, but the way that it gets communicated to different communities. Because different communities, because of geography and history and historical context, share information in different ways. So when we were asking folks about information sharing between Latinx communities, people were talking about how can newsrooms think of more diverse channels to connect with people, to share information about COVID? How are Spanish-speaking communities in Colorado sharing information? And how will people know about that without using the diversity of sources to be, or a diversity of journalists to be able to think about that and communicate with those communities? And then another point that folks don't think about a lot is the way that that categorizes history. So we were talking a little bit about the numbers on what it looks like. We don't know about the numbers of reporters in Denver. But even for my work, and I'm sure for Tina's work and your work as well, when we're going back to think about how far we've come or what initiatives have come before us, specifically those led by Black and Brown communities, if we don't have folks that were involved in those and that can then report on it, now in 2021, it's harder to find information about stuff that was going on in 1990 because it wasn't being reported on. And now we don't have like a written record of where we came from and where we still have to go.
That is super interesting. And we need that data. We need the data to compare, contrast, and also share with others. Because like you are saying, we need diversity and diversity of storytellers. It is important to also share the struggles of communities of color because they share, like you're saying, issues that are similar. What are those roles and responsibilities that diverse journalists play in our newsrooms? I know there's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot to take many times to carry on. I'll give you an example, the secrets of our undocumented communities and how they deal with the reality that they need to live. So what are your thoughts about these roles and responsibilities of diverse journalists?
Let me just clarify, the roles and responsibilities to whom? To the newsroom, to the community,
to the community. I think it's both ways. It's a big responsibility to bring the stories, or bring their voices. In my case, when I'm working, I make a huge effort of bringing their stories in first person narrative instead of me reporting about them. I want them to report with me because I think that's key. The community trusts you. And then at the same time, you feel a huge accomplishment of putting those voices that are not heard normally in corporate media.
As you're speaking, I was thinking about when I moved back to New Mexico from California and I was covering a community in Albuquerque, some Barelas neighborhood. And it was a conversation around how Barelas is changing. And I went out to go do my interviews. It was the first interviews that I did when I went back home. And I felt that in the first interviews, because I felt like I was talking to my auntie and my uncle. And that created in me something that I've had to like work with in my profession, is that our job is to be fair. Our job is to be accurate. Our job is to report on the experiences of people with the kind of nuance and human complication that exists among all of us. In this kind of reporting too, I found like a kind of protective thing coming over me too, right? Because they had not talked to reporters before, and they might be telling me things that I'm thinking, do you really want to say this? So, you know, I think in part of our training, we're like, oh my gosh, that's a great quote. And I'm going to get that quote. But then there's a realization that, especially when dealing with communities that do not have a lot of exposure to media, and even otherwise, I do think we have an obligation, in addition to interviewing, we also have an obligation to educate our sources, because we know what the potential repercussions are that they may not be aware of, right? That they may be inviting in, especially now, you know, back then those repercussions might come through a letter to the editor. Now we live in a social and viral world, and where unfortunately people can be attacked for something that they've expressed in a story. So I do think that in terms of obligation to communities that we're covering and those that may be in particular vulnerable communities, there is an education role that we play. There is no question that across the board, trust is an issue. And it's why I think the work that Diamond is leading is so vital, because it examines ways that are community-led in which we can build relationships of trust with people who have damn good reason not to trust us, that history has taught them it's really not in their best interest at all times. Start talking when somebody comes up to them with a reporter's notebook, right? So I think what Diamond is doing plays a really critical role in terms of talking about the responsibility, because it flips the lens from the traditional way, which is newsroom-led, to community-led. So Diamond, I think you should talk about that.
Really good point, Tina Griego. Thank you so much. I think that is key. Diamond, why is it that we need to use this important thing about reporting and news as a way of liberation?
Yes, using reporting and news as a way of liberation. I love that. But I think that one of the reasons that we've landed on engaging in this legacy of harm is because that's what we've heard from communities. So we have News Voices projects in different places all over the country. And one thing that we've heard there, and specifically here in Colorado, is this fear or this mistrust or justified mistrust between journalism institutions and communities of color because of the ways that they have been either excluded as an audience, as integral to the news creation process, or have been actively maligned or harmed by some of the coverage and the ways that it portrays Black and Brown communities. So really, if we're thinking about the transformation of local news and the future of local news, which has been a big part of Colorado's conversation, is how are we saving local news? What does local journalism look like in the future? We need to think about ways that we're building it up in such a manner that it does not have the same relationship to communities of color that it did in the past. And because it is communities of color that are bringing this forward in terms of trust and reasons that they have to fear and the stories and experiences that they and their communities hold, they should also then be at the forefront of the conversation to talk about what they need and what they feel is necessary to repair that harm and what are the steps to get there. So when we're building the future, it's one that's more equitable, inclusive for all Coloradans.
Diamond Hardiman, you're talking about trust and reparation, two key things that I think are super important in the work that we do. Well, what moved you to create Latinx Voices Group and Journals of Color? That experience of that day for me was an eye-opener, and it changed me and it gave me a lot of energy. It has energized me and it has connected me with others to a point that I am inspired, and we are going to be having once a month a space that is going to be dedicated to journals, reporters of color in the station, in KGNU. And that's going to be every second Monday of the month, starting June 14th. So I'm making an announcement as I am interviewing you today, and thank you for letting me put this little seed out there, this contribution into the efforts that you already started.
Yes, of course. And we're so excited for that, right? In that announcement. There are a lot of reasons that moved us to create the Latinx Voices Working Groups. Some I already talked about is that there are big conversations at the forefront of Colorado about what the future looks like. And we wanted to be able to incorporate community into that process, not only because they are the first to understand like solutions that will be necessary for them to build trust, but because they're a part of the news information sharing ecosystem and they're a part of the process of making news. So with this working group recommendations and the things that we'll be sharing with newsrooms, funders, policymakers, and communities is really about being in lockstep with one another throughout the whole process, because we play such communities of color and Latinx communities play such an important role in sharing information with each other and being conduits of important information. And I think that what emphasized that even more is kind of the national stage that we're in right now. So in the lead up to this, there have been national uprisings, I guess you could say, in newsrooms where journalists of color are getting together and saying, this is no longer acceptable. We saw it at the Philadelphia Inquirer. We saw it with a bunch of journalist unions. And we saw the results of that when we saw the Kansas City Star kind of issue an apology for the way that their coverage has impacted communities and the LA Times. So there's national things that are moving this conversation forward. And then also we have COVID-19 and really the discrepancies that were shown with that and the importance of local news and the importance of being able to get information to people in a way that they can receive it. So a lot of what we've been hearing from Coloradans is how they were getting information about COVID-19 from trusted community leaders, and how there were sometimes discrepancies in information that was relatable and relative to communities. So are we getting this information in Spanish? Are we sharing this information through other methods that are online? How are we getting this to folks? So that combined together with what we've heard, what's going on the national stage. And then of course, in Colorado, there's a long history of organizing around media, specifically with Latinx communities. And I think we heard a lot about that at our pre-event for our Black Voices Working Group, where we talked with Polly Baca, but we've had conversations with Polly Baca and Nita Gonzalez, and Joe Torres was even telling me about stuff that was going on in Colorado that he did with Tina, with the Parity Project. So there's just such a long history, and we're just hoping to continue to build that. The necessity of the moment brought the conversation to the forefront.
Tina, do you want to complement what Diamond just shared?
I want to point out that in with these, also this newsrooms that you mentioned, there's also the Denver Post and the Newspaper Guild at the Denver Post, which is, you know, which is also advocating for changes to the way that it has historically done business and how better to create a culture that is supportive of journalists of color, how to establish more meaningful conversations and coverage of communities of color. They would like an audit to examine their coverage. And well, what we're seeing locally is within newsrooms, you know, there are these conversations happening. I think we just want to connect some dots. And when I decided to like try to create this very informal group of journals of color, right, it was, I got to admit, it was largely out of frustration because we're here again. We have, again, these episodic periods of soul searching and breastfeeding. And I feel as though in those moments, what is happening is sincere. I have no reason to believe that for the most part, it's not sincere, that it's not authentic, that there are not people who are committed to change, but it's a moment. And then the moment goes away. What's really critical here is that is that how we capture this moment, how we build upon the foundation that Diamond is talking about, right? And then how we sustain it. Like, how does it become something that is sustainable, in which consistency is a byword? That, I think, is the big challenge. So with Journals of Color, it was really like, okay, we're here again. We're having this conversation again. Good on you, newsrooms, doing this conversation. But for the journalists of color, let's just start talking to one another. Let's just start talking about what our experiences are. Because for some of us, we might be the only. We might be one of two. We might just feel totally burnt out and at a loss and powerless and feeling powerless. So let's talk. Let's talk about how we can support each other in our work. Let's talk about what our newsrooms are doing, and maybe that work informs another newsroom and we start to cross-pollinate. So that was the impetus. That was the impetus for that. We've only had one meeting, but we're going to have another one soon.
The key also in the Journals of Color is that you open up a big door to all of us. I also want to salute that you were opening to all ethnicities, because that's key, I think, in being diverse and open-minded. Why is it important to create supportive and caring structures for people that are involved in news, in local news? There are not so many of us. At the same time, there's so much need for our community. We need to cover their stories. It's super urgent.
I mean, it's urgent, right? It's important. Creating that culture is important, because what happens now is we get a lot of hand-wringing about how hard it is to find journalists of color. And I'm not saying it's not, but we set up structural barriers that make it difficult. Again, this is not a box to be checked. You don't hire a journalist of color and then they're the only person in the newsroom and there is no support and there's isolation. And so then they're out, and maybe they're out of the business entirely. And that's a huge loss. So then we're back to the same place. Like, oh, it's so hard. It's so hard to find a journalist of color. So figure out a way to support the people you have. You support the people you have, the word gets out. You start to become a magnet for people who want to work with you, because you value diversity, because you value different life experiences and perspectives, because you're not afraid to be challenged, because you know that that challenge will lead to deeper coverage.
Diamond, do you want to add something else to this question? How do we create supportive and caring structures for journalists of color?
Both of you are spot on, especially in talking about, Tina was talking about burnout earlier, and that being part of why she brought a group of journalists together, because community and like connection is an antidote for burnout, and it's an antidote for cynicism and hopelessness. So I think that that's really important alone as a standalone fact. But again, what Tina said, being the only or being one of few, or when we talk about the responsibilities and roles that we expect of journalists of color, there are different nuances. There are different responsibilities. There are different things that journalists of color respond to. So then giving them supports that are not responsive to the differences of the work that they have to do or participate in leaves them without the support they need. And then we're down another journalist. Because even if you think about one thing that's been brought up lately is what it means to cover police or traumas like that, that involved Black and brown children, and what kind of trauma that brings for journalists of color to constantly be covering like things like that. And we see similar things with journalists when we're thinking about school shootings in Colorado, and that's been a conversation about how much of a toll and trauma that takes. And we're thinking about how to respond to that. We're thinking about how to make sure that journalists feel safe and supported in covering that, and also honoring like the sadness and the trauma that comes with that. And I think we need to be thinking about journalists of color in the same way. When they're covering traumatic things that are going on with their community and what's going on with them, we need to think about ways that we can support them so that they continue to tell the stories and share the experiences and shine light on the things that we hope all journalists do.
Diamond Hardiman, manager at News Voices Colorado Free Press, and Tina Griego, reporter, editor, and coach at Colab. Thank you so much to chat with me about the importance of diversity in our newsrooms, or the lack of. Thank you again for joining me today.
Thank you.
My name is Rosanna Longo. This is KGNU Community Radio, and this is part of our Trends podcast. It's our panel discussion.